of Acts, chapter 9. Book of Acts, chapter 9. I'm going to read the first 12 verses. And Saul, yet or continuously, breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Lord, went unto the high priest and desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound unto Jerusalem. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven. And he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise, go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. And the men which journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no man. And Saul arose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man. But they led him by the hand and brought him unto Damascus. And he was 3 days without sight, and neither did eat nor drink. And there was a certain disciple at Damascus. This would have been one of those that Saul was seeking to bring back to Jerusalem. His name was Ananias, and to him said the Lord in a vision, Ananias. And he said, Behold, I am here, Lord. And the Lord said unto him, Arise, and go into the street, which is called Straight, and inquire in the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus. For behold, he prayeth, and hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in, and putting his hand on him, that he might receive his sight. The first 8 verses speak of miraculous conversion and salvation of Saul. And it's not our intent to look at the details of his salvation experience, though it is a wonderful thing to look at. And certainly there are many, many wonderful lessons taught in the salvation experience of Saul of Tarsus. We want to take our thoughts from the statement that the Lord made to a disciple named Ananias concerning Saul shortly, very shortly, after Saul's salvation experience, and that is, Behold, he prayeth, in verse 11. And that'll be the subject of the message, Behold, he prayeth. That's quite a statement when the Lord makes it. You and I can say, Brother so-and-so is in the other room praying, or Sister so-and-so is in the other room praying. But when the Lord says, Behold, he prayeth, when the Lord says, when the Lord acknowledges that someone is praying, that's quite a statement. That's much, much more than you and I saying that someone is praying. Because the Lord knows the heart, so he knows when someone is truly praying. I want to consider some things as we approach that statement, some things leading up to that statement. First of all, consider how the Bible presents prayer. Prayer, of course, the Bible has much to say about the subject of prayer. And the Bible presents prayer as a duty It is a duty of a child of God to pray. It is our responsibility to pray. In other words, we have an obligation to God to pray. But it's not only, it's not simply a duty or a responsibility or an obligation. It is a perpetual duty of a child of God to pray. It is a perpetual responsibility and obligation for you and I to pray. Jesus said in Luke 18 and verse 1 that men ought always to pray. That's perpetual. Now, always covers all time. Men ought to always to pray. Ought to always be in a spirit of prayer. This is taught throughout the New Testament. Paul wrote in Ephesians 6 and verse 18, praying always. He wrote in Colossians 4 and verse 2, continue in prayer. That is, once you begin praying, keep on praying. Continue in prayer. He wrote in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17, to pray without ceasing. So we have a duty to pray, and that duty is perpetual. It is continuous. It is a duty that includes all things. Paul wrote in Philippians 4 and verse 6, everything in prayer. That is, we are to pray in everything. Even when we know what to do without praying, we are to pray. We are to pray in everything. He also tells us that we are to pray in all places. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 8, I will therefore that men pray everywhere, wherever we are. And about everything and continuously, we are to be in prayer. So when we read that Paul, when we read of Paul, behold, he prayeth, that is a picture of obedience to God. That is a picture of one fulfill in the path of duty as far as prayer is concerned. Prayer is also presented as a privilege. And we must realize that all of our duties to God, whatever they be, are privileges. It's all a privilege. To do something for God, to do something in the name of God, is a privilege. It's an opportunity. So though it is a duty, it is not merely a duty. It is a privilege. It is an opportunity. In other words, it is a privilege to pray. It is an opportunity to be in prayer. And I believe it's a priceless privilege. It's an incomparable privilege. If you think about what prayer is, it is an approach to God. That's a privilege. That anyone of man would be able to approach God is a privilege. That's a blessing. What an opportunity. I can approach God. Prayer is access to the Creator of all things. What a privilege. What an opportunity to be able to approach the Creator of all things. Prayer is making an approach to omnipotence and omniscience. Again, this is a privilege. This is not merely a duty. It is a duty. But it's much more than a duty. It's a privilege. It's an opportunity. Access to the throne of grace. Again, in Hebrews 4 and verse 12, we read that we can approach the throne of grace with boldness to find grace in time of need. That's a privilege. And we are to do that always. Always we are to approach the throne of grace. We're to do that in all things. We're to do that in all places, wherever I am, wherever you are. You and I have the privilege, we have the duty to approach the throne of grace. We have the key, we have the privilege, we have the right, because it's a God-given right, to enter into the throne room of God. What a privilege. So when Paul says, or when the Lord says of Paul, "Behold, he prayeth," you're looking at someone who is availing themselves of a great privilege and opportunity. Vice versa, if we fail to pray, we are not taking advantage of a wonderful privilege, of a wonderful opportunity that we have. So prayer is a duty. Prayer is a privilege. The Bible presents prayer as a great need. All through the Bible, we are told in many different ways that we need to pray. It's not just a duty, we need to pray. It's not just a privilege, we need to pray. Again, Jesus said in Luke 18 in verse 1, men ought always to pray. They ought to pray. They need to pray. They ought to pray because they need to pray. So they ought to because prayer is absolutely essential to spiritual health. You cannot be spiritually healthy and not have a spiritually sound prayer life. You can kid yourself about spiritual health, but if you do not pray, you have a disease of soul. People may not be able to see it on the outside yet, but it'll show up. Prayer is essential to spiritual health. It is absolutely essential to spiritual stamina. And it is absolutely essential to spiritual fruit. So, this is true always. We always need to pray. It is true about everything. We always need to pray. It is true in all places, wherever we find ourselves. Whatever circumstances we find ourselves in, whether they be adverse circumstances or whether they be what we consider favorable circumstances, we're to be in prayer. We're to be in much prayer. So when we read of Paul, "Behold, he prayeth," he was doing that which was very needed. He was doing that which was very needed. Prayer also is presented as a great resource. It is a resource for a child of God. Bible teaches us that in and through prayer, Hebrews 4 verse 12 again, we find grace to help in time of need. What other place to find help than omnipotence? And we in and through prayer we find help. In and through prayer we find strength. There's enablement in prayer. There's joy to be had in prayer. I'm talking about real prayer. There is peace, contentment to be had in prayer. There's assurance to be had in prayer. We find guidance in prayer. We find instruction in prayer. We find wisdom in prayer. Why, if you follow the guidance and the instruction of God, that's wisdom. You do what God says, that's wisdom. Not to do what God says is foolishness. But we find wisdom in prayer. It's in prayer that we can find relief. We may not find that our circumstances, that the adverse circumstances are taken away. But you will find relief in real prayer. You will find comfort in real prayer. Every child of God ought to know this. Every child of God ought to know this by experience. And therefore, it ought to be the first thing we do is flee to the Lord. Because this is where we find relief. This is where we find comfort. Prayer also is a means of escaping Satan's temptations or the temptations of the flesh. It's a way of escape. No better way of escape than prayer. It is through prayer that we can, we sung about it tonight, that we can become a blessing to others. Because prayer strengthens us. And prayer changes us. Again, it's not the goal in prayer to change God. That would be foolish. God is omniscient. Why would you want to change that? Prayer should change us. The resource of prayer is always, whatever the circumstances, we find these things in prayer. The resource of prayer is in all things. And the resource of prayer can be had in all places. So when we read of Paul, behold, he prayeth, he was availing himself of the resources of God. That's wisdom. That's wisdom. God is abundant. And to avail ourselves of the resources of God, that's wisdom. Not to do so is utter foolishness and folly. Notice, again, we see that prayer is a resource. Notice that Saul, though he was physically blind, verse 8, and Saul arose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man. And he had to be led by others into the city of Damascus. He saw no man. But then notice in verse 12 what the Lord said to Ananias concerning Saul, who was praying and hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him that he might receive his sight. So here's Saul, physically blind. He is praying. And while he is praying, he sees, not physically, but he sees in a vision. In other words, the Lord has shown him something. The Lord has revealed something to him. And when did this happen? When he was praying. He's blind physically, but he saw in a vision a man named Ananias coming to him. And then in verse 18, we're talking about the resources of prayer. Ananias, of course, comes to him, and in verse 18, and immediately there fell from his eyes as had been scales, and he received sight. Now we're talking about physical sight. And he received sight. So in prayer, Saul, or Paul, saw some things, even though he was physically blind. A person can be physically blind, sightless, and if they are a person of prayer, they will see things that those who have perfectly good vision cannot see. Prayer causes us to see things. He saw in a vision that a man named Ananias would come to him and that he would receive his physical sight. And what he saw gave him great assurance. What he saw gave him great strength. And it was in prayer that he received strength and direction. Notice verse 18 and verse 19. And immediately there fell from his eyes, again he's been praying, as it had been scales. By this time he's been praying for 3 days. And he received sight forthwith and arose and was baptized. Who told him to rise? Who told him to be baptized? The Lord did. He received this instruction in prayer. And when he received meat, he was strengthened. So you see, prayer was a great resource for Saul. And prayer is always a great resource. That is, when we do it correctly. When we truly pray. And this man was truly praying because the Lord himself said, behold, he prayeth. So for all of this so far, we see that prayer is a matter of great importance. It is a matter of great consequence. And because it is such a matter of great importance and consequence, it should be a matter of priority. Prayer should be a priority in our lives. Prayer should not be a fire escape. I got news for you. If you use prayer for a fire escape, you don't even have a fire escape, because you're not really praying. If the only time you go to the Lord is when you think your world is falling apart, if that's the only time, you don't even have a fire escape. You have a fire escape without any steps. You have nothing. So prayer ought to be a priority. It's something we should be always doing. Always praying. In everything. And in all places. Also, prayer in the Bible is presented as a labor. Again, Jesus said in Luke 18 and verse 1, men ought always to pray. And then he said, and not to faint. And not to faint, or not to grow weary in praying. Not to grow weak in praying. Not to quit praying. In other words, prayer requires strength. And where do we get the strength to pray? Through prayer. Prayer requires stamina. Prayer is more than just saying a few words. That doesn't require any strength. That doesn't require any stamina. Real prayer requires strength. It requires stamina. Men ought to always to pray and not to faint. So, Paul, of course, in his epistles, he presented prayer as a labor. When he spoke of Epaphras, he said that he labored fervently in prayers. Prayer is a labor. It is a labor because every fiber of your flesh fights against it. I'm talking about real prayer. The devil fights against it. You get down to real praying, and the devil's going to show up, or his demons are going to show up. There's going to be a battle that's going to take place. And it can be physically, mentally, and emotionally draining. Prayer requires stamina. It requires strength. Again, this is a labor that is to be carried out always. We're to always be praying. It is a labor that is to be done in all things. I don't care if it's buying a car or whatever it is. You're to pray. You're to pray concerning God's will. Pray about all things. Pray in all places. So when you read of Paul, behold, he prayeth. There's a man who is performing a spiritual labor. He is laboring. He is praying. Also, consider what is presented to us just prior to the statement, behold, he prayeth. We have Saul's salvation experience. Again, we're not going to go into the details of that, but think about that. In that salvation experience, in God saving the soul of Saul, we have manifested very clearly God's sovereignty. Saul had every intent of going into Damascus and bringing back God's people to Jerusalem, to try them and to put them to death. But that wasn't God's plan. And whose plan won out? Whose plan prevailed? God's did. We see the sovereignty of God. That's an encouragement to pray. Well, if you don't believe in the sovereignty of God, it's an exercise in futility to pray. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. If you don't believe in the sovereignty of God, why would you pray? So we have God's sovereignty. You read there in Acts chapter 9, there's God's power. Saul was a powerful individual. And God brought him down to the ground very easily, very quickly. We have God's power. That also is an encouragement to pray. We have God's grace. We have God's mercy. We have His love, His long-suffering. All this is brought out here in Acts chapter 9. And was not Saul the recipient of God's power? Was he not the recipient of God's grace and God's mercy and God's long-suffering and God's love? He saw that day. He saw these things. He experienced these things. As you read here in Acts chapter 9, that light that shined, that was the glory of God. So we have a picture of the glory of God. All of these things are encouragement to pray. As you and I experience the sovereignty of God, and if we're paying attention throughout our daily life, you can't help but see the sovereignty of God. It's everywhere, if you're paying attention. Sometimes, even if you're not paying attention, you'll see it. If you're paying attention, you'll see God's power and His glory and His love and His grace and His mercy. And these things encourage us to pray. But also notice from what God told Ananias in verses 11 and 12. And the Lord said unto him, Arise, go into the street, which is called Straight, and inquire in the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus, for behold, he prayeth. And hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him that he might receive his sight. What we have there is a display of the omniscience of God. Notice in verse 11, he knew the street where Saul was. Arise and go into the street which is called Straight. And then he got even more specific. He knew the house where Saul was. And inquire in the house of Judas. So he knew the street where Saul was. He knew the house in which Saul was in. He knew his name. He says, you go there and you inquire of one called Saul. He also knew where Saul came from. One called Saul of Tarsus. He knows the man's name. He knows where he came from. He knows what street he's on. He knows what house he's in. And he knows what he's doing. Behold, he prayeth. Behold, he prayeth. And he also knew what Saul was experiencing while he was praying. We see that in verse 12. And hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him that he might receive sight. God's omniscience encourages us to pray. That God knows all things encourages us to pray. We do not pray to inform God. God does not need to be informed about anything. He knows. We come to God because He knows. Because He knows. So omniscience should encourage us to pray. So we see the things that happen leading up to behold, he prayeth. We see now the announcement concerning Saul. During Saul's salvation experience, there in verses 3 through 6, there was a bright light from heaven. And I believe when that light appeared, suddenly there shined round about him, verse 3, a light from heaven. He fell to the earth. He heard a voice. He spoke to the Lord, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord spoke to him, I am Jesus. I believe during that time, once the light hit, Saul closed his eyes because of the brightness of the light. The light is the glory of God. And then we come down to verse 8. Remember, Saul has fallen to the ground. I believe he closed his eyes, and we read in verse 8, and Saul arose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he then opened his eyes, but there was a problem. He couldn't see. His eyes are opened, but he cannot see. He is so blind that he has to be led to Damascus. And we're told in verse 9, and he was there 3 days without sight. What's he doing during those 3 days? Well, the Bible tells us he wasn't eating and he wasn't drinking. Verse 9, he was there 3 days without sight and neither did eat nor drink. What was he doing? Behold, he prayeth. So there's Saul. His eyes are opened, but he cannot see anything. And for 3 days, he prayed. For 3 days, he prayed rather than eat. I don't believe he stopped praying for 3 days. And that's when it was during this time that the Lord said to Ananias, behold, he prayeth. In other words, Ananias, when you go into the house of Judas, you'll know who he is because he's praying. You'll know who he is. He's the one that's praying. Now, there may have been others in the house, I don't know. But it was Saul that was praying. And when the Lord said, behold, he prayeth, that was something that God approved of. He was approving of what Saul did. Now, God does not approve of all prayers. Read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 6. He doesn't approve of the prayers of the Pharisees and the hypocrites. He doesn't approve of their prayers. James chapter 4. He doesn't approve of prayerless praying. He doesn't approve of asking amiss. Those are not real prayers. But this was a prayer that he approved. Here was a man who was really, truly praying. And when the Lord said, behold, he prayeth, I believe the Lord was pleased with the prayer of Saul. It was real. Now, if you think about it, prayer is learned. You have to be taught how to pray. And that is why the apostle said in Luke chapter 11 and verse 1, you remember they heard Christ pray, and they said, Lord, teach us to pray. Who taught Saul how to pray? He'd just been saved. And for 3 days, he's at Damascus following his salvation. And what's he doing? He's praying. Did he know the theological terms to be used in prayer? I don't think so. Did he know the etiquette of prayer as far as religion is concerned? I don't think so. He was truly praying. Who taught him to pray? The Lord did. The Lord taught him how to pray. And that's the only way you and I will ever pray, is if the Lord teaches us how to pray. So what does this mean? Behold, he prayeth. Real prayer requires, and whatever real prayer requires, Saul was doing it. And he's been doing it for 3 days now. Real prayer requires that you and I take our proper place before God. Until we take our proper place before God, it's just words. Prayer may consist of words. Prayer may consist of groanings that cannot be uttered. But in real prayer, whether it be groanings, whether it be words, real prayer requires that we take our proper place before God. So when God said concerning Saul, "Behold, he prayeth," it's like saying, "Behold, he has taken his proper place before me." What is our proper place before God? Well, it's a place of humility. I don't believe the proud can pray. They can say words. They can't really pray. To take our place before God is a place of weakness. We take a place of weakness. We take the place of ignorance. We don't know, he does. We take the place of ignorance. We take the place of need. I'm a needy creature and he has what I need. In all true praying, self-will is laid to the side. In all true praying, there is a denial of self, a dying to self. Our proper place before God is a place of surrender. It is a place of recognizing the sovereignty and the greatness and the authority and the power and the ownership of God Himself. So we need to ask ourselves, since prayer requires you and I to take our proper place before God, how often do we really, truly pray? To what extent is our life characterized by taking our proper place before God? Again, we're to pray always. So what does that mean? That means we're always to take our proper place before God. We're to pray in all things. What does that mean? That means whatever happens, we're to take our proper place before God. We're to pray in every place. What does that mean? It means everywhere we are, we're to take our place, our proper place before God. Behold, he prayeth. That's quite a statement coming from God. Because that means here's a man who has taken his proper place before God. Also, in prayer, the individual has taken his place before God. The heart is drawn to God. The heart is drawn to God. You cannot pray if your heart is not drawn to God. You can go through the motions of prayer. You can say the words of prayer. But in all true prayer, our heart is being drawn to God. We've all prayed prayers without our heart being drawn to God. We've all done that many times. And hopefully there have been times in our life when we have prayed and our heart is drawn to God. It's like a magnetic pull. You can feel it. And certainly you know the difference between the two. Empty words and a heart that is drawn to God. Again, we're to pray always. That means our heart is to always be drawn to God. We're to pray in all things or about everything. That is, in all things, our heart is to be drawn to God. In all places. So when the Lord says, "Behold, he prayeth," here is a man who not only has taken his proper place before God, but here is a man whose heart is being drawn, pulled toward God. That's real praying. That's real praying. Thirdly, real praying is earnestly seeking the Lord. In real prayer, again, you've taken your proper place before God, your heart is being pulled toward God, being drawn toward God. In real prayer, there is a focus upon God. In real praying, God is the focus. Not our need. Not saying that we don't recognize our need, but that's not the focus. The focus is upon God. And there is a desire and there is a yearning for the Lord. There is a longing for His presence, for Him to show His glory, for Him to show His power. There is a longing for the help of the Lord. There is a longing for God to intervene. We realize our need, and we realize our need so strongly and so vividly that we realize God must intervene. It's the only way. So you're seeking the intervention of God. You're seeking for God to manifest Himself. You're seeking to know the will of God. Prayer is a seeking of God. You and I can say all the right words and never once truly seek the Lord. But when God says, behold, so-and-so is praying, you can mark it down. That individual is truly seeking the Lord. That's prayer. How often does the Lord look upon you and I and say, behold, he prayeth. There he is on such and such a street and such a house at such and such a time of day, and behold, he prayeth. Behold, he prayeth. How many times has the Lord said that of you and I? Behold, he prayeth. Or how many times, rather, the Lord looks down at us and says, behold, he is forsaking prayer again. Which is it? Behold, he prayeth. That means something when God says it. To pray, in all real prayer, there has to be a recognizing of a need. There has to be the recognition of a need. You know, people will say all the time, I know I need God. I know. But remember what Jesus said to the woman at the well. If you knew these things, you would. That's true. If we really knew our need, and we really knew that He has what we need, we'd pray. The very fact that we don't pray shows that we don't know. Either that or we're the biggest fools on earth. I mean, if you know and you don't, I mean, that's a special kind of foolishness. So, in all true prayer, there is a recognition of need. There is a recognition of inability. Without me, you can do nothing, Jesus said. When we truly recognize that, the truth is we very rarely recognize that fully. But when we truly recognize our inability, we say with the psalmist, I am poor and needy. He said that several times in the Psalms. So, true praying is to recognize our need always, in all things and in all places. Fifthly, true prayer involves a calling upon God for something specific. It's a pouring out of the heart to God. Again, we must make personal examination. We don't have the record of what Saul was praying for. We don't know. You say, well, it's obvious he was praying for his sight. Well, I'm sure that came up because he was told that Ananias would come. But I don't believe for 3 days that's the only thing he prayed for. Prayed for a lot of things. I believe he prayed for forgiveness over and over and over and over again. Prayed for God's mercy over and over and over again. So, he was calling upon God. When God said, behold, he prayeth, he was calling upon God for something specific or specifics. And again, as we've said many times, we all do it. We're very general in our prayers. And I understand, in public praying, you almost have to be. But we're talking about in our private, personal praying. We need to be specific. And we need to be most specific about ourselves and call upon God. That's what Saul was doing. Sixthly, we only have seven, we're almost done. In all true prayer, there is personal and real contact with God. We have not truly prayed if we have not made personal contact with the Lord. True praying. Prayer is communion. It is fellowship with God. So when the Lord said, "Behold, he prayeth," you see a man that is in communion and fellowship with the Lord. What a privilege. What an opportunity. Contact, personal contact with the Sovereign One. Personal contact with God the Father. Personal contact with the shepherd of the sheep. What a privilege it is to pray. Lastly, in all true prayer, faith is essential. Faith is essential to real praying. Prayer is an approach unto God. God cannot be approached without faith. It's impossible. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6 says, "But without faith it's impossible to please him." And then it goes on to say, "For he that cometh to God," we come to God in prayer, "must believe that he is." Must believe that he is. Saul's been newly saved, but he believed that God is. Did Saul know everything? Did he know? Did he have his theology straight about God? No, I don't think so. But theology has little to nothing to do with praying. He had faith that God is. So when the Lord said, "Behold, he prayeth," that's like saying, "Behold, there is a man who believes that I am. That I am everything that I say I am." This faith allows us to approach God with much assurance. Again, Hebrews 4, verse 12, "Let us come boldly under the throne of grace." That's faith. It's faith that gives us that boldness. It's faith that gives us that assurance that we can approach the throne of grace. It is this faith that gives us confidence in God. 1 John 5 and verse 14, "And this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will," that's real praying, "he heareth us." He heareth us. And it is faith without wavering. James 1 verse 6, talking about praying for wisdom, he says, "But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering." In other words, without any wavering whatsoever, let him ask in faith. Who teaches us to have faith? God does. Who imparts faith? God does. You can't impart faith to yourself. No one else can impart it to you. People can teach you about faith, but no one can impart faith but God. No one can really teach us to have faith but God. So everything about prayer is something that God teaches us. So it seems to me that we need to go to the Lord's school of prayer. And you go there in Matthew 6, he says, "After this manner pray ye." He's teaching them how to pray. So when the Lord says, "Behold, he prayeth," Here's a man who believes, and I am. What a statement when God makes it. Behold, he prayeth. And all for God to look down upon you and I and to say, behold, he or she prayeth. How wonderful to have our lives marked by that. The truth is, that should not be a rare occurrence in our life. It should be an everyday occurrence. Behold, he prayeth. It should be able to be said in everything. That should be our goal. Behold, he prayeth. What a blessing. So again, this is, to me, is a remarkable statement. When God makes it, behold, he prayeth. Did Saul pray a perfect prayer? No, no man can. That's why we have Jesus as our advocate. That's why we have the Lord as our intercessor. He's our mediator. He's our priest. He presents our prayers in his perfection. No man has ever prayed a perfect prayer. Even if his heart is right, he's never prayed a perfect prayer. Never has. You say the wrong words, but God knows our heart. He knows what we mean. You can say the right words. God knows our hearts. He knows whether or not we're really, truly praying. And we need to be a people who truly, truly prays. Certainly, we ought to be able to see the need of such. And we need to ask God, as the apostles asked him in Luke 11 and verse 1, Lord, teach me to pray. Teach me how to pray. Teach me, Lord, to pray. While we're praying, we ought to be praying, Lord, teach me to pray. Instruct me on how to pray. And for those who have heard many say it through the years, oh, I'd be scared to pray that. What kind of God do you have? Is your God that mean? I mean, that's really a sad, sad statement. Lord, teach me to pray. Seems to me, the Bible teaches if we would pray that, God would do just that. He would teach us how to pray. And that's the only way we can learn, is if he teaches us. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us.